Are you ready for this? Hello and welcome to your All Out Cricket Podblast.
Thanks, Ross.
There is so much to get through this show. I am joined by Phil and Vish. It's deadline day on the magazine, lads. When's it due?
Yeah,
to the printers?
We go some point tomorrow morning. We haven't slept in days.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this is special stuff.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like that movie about Watergate.
Yeah, All the President's Men.
That's it.
It's more like Waterworld, which just tanked completely.
If only it were like Waterworld, an underrated movie.
Yeah. A movie that gave me nightmares.
Yeah.
Girls behind the ears, that was
I've just broken my pen there. I'm very tense. Sorry about that.
Tense times. Do you know what gave me nightmares? Costner used to have a machine that he weed into so he could turn it into water, which he could then drink.
In reality?
Yeah. It's not real Kevin Costner. I'm talking Gilman, whatever his character was called. The Mariner, I believe he was called.
That's horrendous.
Well.
God.
Right, well, there we go. Right, we're cooking on gas as ever.
So much has happened in the world of cricket. Shivnarine Chanderpaul has been dropped. The Mumbai Indians have won the IPL.
Hooray!
Yes.
Test cricket has begun. Well, not test cricket, in fact. ODI cricket. But cricket has returned to Pakistan with Zimbabwe's trip over there. And the 55th best batsman in the world did all right against a team that might be seventh at the end of the series. So let's kick off with that. England, New Zealand, gentlemen, after just a little bit of music. England versus New Zealand. Gentlemen, what a game. What a test match. Let's kick off. Out of 10, how good was that test match? We've got to be cranking at an 8.
9.2.
9.2, you're going 9.2.
We're going decimals.
If we're dealing decimals, I would happily go 8.9. Maybe 8.9.
I don't want to kick off on a negative note, but what is it that brings it from a 10 down to a 9.2, an 8.9?
I think the finish, you know, the real arse-nipper of a finish.
Yeah.
Okay.
10 overs.
So two results were still available with an hour to go, but three weren't. And you know, I'm going to sound really smug, but I was at Edgbaston 10 years ago and I was at this one as well. And while this one was redemptive and restorative and all these kinds of wonderful things, it can't compare to
Can I summarise that argument? I met John Kennedy, Senator. You're no John Kennedy. You know.
And I don't pretend to be either.
No. About the test match.
No.
You met Edgbaston in 05.
And yeah.
This was no Edgbaston 05.
An oblique reference from Alex Adele.
But, you know, I believe I'm right in saying that it had more runs than any other test match in history. Is that right?
Something like that. Most runs with also taking 40 wickets as well.
Right.
Yeah. Extraordinary. 10-02. Can I say why I would take it down from a 10 to about an 8.9?
Yeah.
Because New Zealand basically threw it at the end, the last two wickets. I don't understand, and Ross, I know you disagree with me on this, and we're going to get into it.
Absolutely.
I don't understand Southie and Bolt's thinking. I just do not comprehend why you put in that much effort for almost 5 days. And then when you're not chasing, you don't try and block.
It's gone out of fashion to such an extent that it's almost not part of cricket's ruling class anymore, that you just don't do it. You know, you do not stonewall if you're a number 10 or 11. You have a whack because you're a cheeky chappy down at 10 or 11. It's not what you're meant to be doing anyway.
They were undoing their own work.
Yeah,
I mean,
Bolt, I can see
Bolt had been outstanding the whole game.
Yeah.
I was perplexed.
You do wonder if it's if this is kind of the offshoot of we've been seeing more, you know, 9th and 10th wicket stands that have frustrated. But is this the offshoot? Is this the fact that now that 10, 11s reckon they can, you know, still keep their wicket while playing their shots? And evidently that's what I think we all knew Southie was going to bat like that. But Bolt surprised me a little bit because he looked to be showing a bit of fear and at the same time some aptitude and then decided to ramp over to third man.
Extraordinary. That catch, though, from Moeen. Can we have a moment about that? Because it was not easy.
And he somehow managed to roll it down his arm as well.
Showboating.
And then clasp it with his other hand against his wrist. That's
what
real
you get
skill
from a man of the class of Moeen Ali. He doesn't do things by halves.
Yeah,
it was wonderful, and it got buried in all the brouhaha.
Buried
in the brouhaha. So what have you got to say
Ben
about the
Stokes firing with bat was mirror image of Ian Botham.
Mirror
says Mike Brearley.
So it's the same but backwards. Is that one?
Ben Stokes reminds UK media of Ian Botham, Kevin Peterson. I don't really understand that headline at all. That. It's an odd use of a comma by you, Fox Sports.
Okay.
John Etheridge, it was murderous and magnificent. It was like Ian Botham at his best. Vintage. Gentlemen. How good was Stokes in that game?
Well, he made the quickest 100 in history at Lords, which speaks for itself.
Mm-hmm.
But as we said before the show, I'm horribly one-eyed and biased about this thing.
Are you passing up the fish now?
I will do.
The independent ombudsman.
I did interview Stokes last Saturday before the test match kicked off, and I was in my whites. This was at 12:30 in the afternoon. I was about to go out on field. And we had 25 minutes having a chat. It was another glorious moment for me, I have to say, in my life, trailing Ben Stokes. He can do no wrong. I feel incredibly proud and smug and conceited at the moment, so I'm just going to leave you all to it.
Vish, he's not the Messiah. He's a very naughty boy. That's
yeah,
really.
And I think that's why we love him. I had quite a strange moment on Sunday afternoon when I rocked up hungover, driving back from a wedding, charging to my front room, trying to get to 100, and had to stop myself from crying.
Wow!
You know when you get into that hungover state where you know suddenly
anything
you're
can
on
go,
your captain, anything like,
you've you got no Liam Perrins,
Beethoven's on TV, and you're about to lose.
Yeah, yeah. Waterworld.
Indeed. Kevin Costner's doing that weird piss thing, and it's all over the shop. But I actually think, kind of objectively, if you look at it, regardless of what he did in that second innings, his innings in the first innings, I don't think we really knew he had that kind of thing in him, because the game was really that was the game, really. 30 for 4, what it was.
Yeah, and 30 for 4.
We know what Root can do, but I'm not gonna lie, I was a bit iffy with Stokes, and then Butler and Ali to come as well. But
I wasn't.
But yeah, I know he's just incredible. I think we need to. I understand what you're saying in terms of people are going over the top about him, but we need to enjoy those kind of moments. We need to really celebrate those kind of people, because we've been crying out for them in our lives, in our sport. It's beautiful to see. I really enjoy him.
Can I give you my hungover equivalent? I went out drinking on a Friday night 8 years ago, and I was so hungover, I was weeping in front of Mandy Moore's A Walk to Remember. Have you ever seen that? It's a B movie in which Mandy Moore gets cancer when she's a high school student, and a boyfriend sticks by her.
That's a proper tearjerker.
I tell you,
I was in pieces. I was so much in pieces that I didn't want to go to the party I'd been invited to that night, where I met my wife.
No.
And I almost didn't go because of Mandy Moore's A Walk to Remember.
A beautiful but weird story.
Yeah. thanks a lot.
And how does that relate to what you feel about Ben Stokes and to
Ross Armstrong? Armstrong, the actor Ross Armstrong.
Hello.
I'm going to ask you a question.
Go on. Yeah, I'd love you to.
Do you recognise in Stokes a kind of a natural showmanship and presence and charisma that will hopefully transcend the runs and the wickets thing?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. Well, I do think that, like you said, we've got players like Joe Root and now Ben Stokes.
Joe Root's just a great player.
He's a great player.
A straightforwardly great player. But Stokes is something else.
He is something else. But also, even Root seems to have some sort of a relationship with the crowd already.
Mm-hmm.
And players like even Moeen Ali and Joss Butler, you look at that 5, 6, 7, 8, and they're all in different manners an entertainer. And Stokes might be the most bullish. It's the way he conducts himself on the field, the way he conducts himself with other players, which means that he is standing up like a KP. Please don't excuse the comparison, but someone that wants to stand up and wants to be in a battle at all times. And the crowd love that.
Yeah.
They love Moeen, the way he plays, his class, his beard. They love Butler's strike rate. And they love Joe Root's absolute class. But I think the jewel in the crown really might be Stokes, because he does have that X factor.
Are you saying that because you're getting a bit carried away because you're sitting next to, to me and so on? Or do you genuinely...
I've always felt that. I've always felt he was a batsman. The odd thing about the nuance of a batting order, I think, is that I've always felt that Moeen Ali, because he's so good, can sort of bat lower down. Because you will never miss his class, no matter where he is. Whereas Stokes needs to be further up in the order, because he is a batsman. First and foremost, I think he will win you a match with the bat more often than he will with the ball.
I think you're bang on.
And when he does it with the bat, he's pretty incomparable.
There's another advantage with Moeen at 8, which is Moeen is the master of a very elegant 40, which at 8 is not nearly as much of a problem as at 6.
Exactly.
I'm a paid-up member of the Moeen fan.
Mm.
Fan club. Do they have fan clubs anymore? You guys must know. Are there fan clubs?
There should be a moment.
When was the last
it's all pop-up fan clubs now, isn't it?
Right, okay. That's a shame. It'd be interesting to know.
Twitter.
It'd be interesting to know when the last fan club closed. Well, there must be something in that, something, you know, quite touching. But anyway, I'm not sure the public has put Mo in that bracket yet.
I don't know.
I don't think there's that affection, because I think there's going to be that immediate connection
that people have with a more obviously everyman figure, such
it's
as
the performance.
Or Root, which is another fair example. Mo in, because of his appearance and because of his otherness, will maybe forever work slightly in the margins of kind of, you know, pop culture, public life, if you like. Which is not to say that he is not an identifiable figurehead of the English game and was on the front of this year's Wisden and was, you know, was one of the most recognisable players from the last year or so. And to me, and I've been saying this for quite a while, but I'm all over the character and identity of this team. And I've been saying it on this show for months and months and feeling increasingly like a tosser. You know, the world going one way and I'm going the other. And so it was gratifying from a personal point of view, what I saw in the last few days, but it was thrilling from a spectacle point of view, especially considering everybody traipsed over to Lords on Thursday morning expecting to bury English cricket because this is the kind of feverish nonsense times that we live in. And instead, we had to praise it.
Yeah, we did. I think we all accept here. There's no point in even debating it that there's fever one way. There's maybe a little fever the other way. But I mean, the points still sound. What I want to do is I want to break this a little bit, put a little jingle in,
yeah,
just to ease the listener's ear.
Yes.
Okay. And then I want to come back and I want to pick up what you're talking about that, the culture of the team and how that interacts with New Zealand with the forthcoming Ashes. Do you know there's an Ashes?
An Ashes?
There's an Ashes.
Yeah, another
one. There's an Ashes one. Another one, yeah. I've been thinking about this a little bit.
Yeah.
And I want to find a grey cloud somewhere in that beautiful blue sky.
You do, well,
you are the man for that, my friend.
Yeah,
go on.
And I think I've found it.
Go on.
All right. If I was Australia, looking at the circumstances in which England had pulled off this extraordinary achievement, I would look at New Zealand's incredible sportsmanship, its attitude to the game, its aggression, and I would say, if in exactly the same circumstances we had not done those two things, we would have won. And what I think is, you know, England are confidence players. They're young. They're not huge personalities. They're not wizened. Somebody telling them they're going to get a broken arm is probably going to make them play worse than otherwise. I just wonder whether New Zealand's respectful attitude, the fact they play the game in the right spirit, the fact that they shook him by the hand, has brought out the best in their opponents.
I think it's difficult to say considering that, what, when Australia come over, only two of the batsmen would have played regularly against Australia. We can discount balance from that last test. And Cook and Root are just, well, only time will tell how far this kind of redemption is for Cook, but he certainly looked back to his best on that Sunday. But Root is a different player now, certainly in the eyes of the world, really. I think Root will be the one that Australia are going to be gunning for.
There was a famous 2009 memo that got leaked, do you remember, about English confidence and the fact that it was like a balloon, you could prick it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just wonder whether that is actually equally applicable regardless of generation. That's the nature of English cricket. It's not as tough as Australian cricket. And this New Zealand side create a nice comfort blanket for those England players to do as well as they can possibly do.
It's a tricky one. Certainly, that game was played in an unusually convivial kind of atmosphere.
Which is to be commended.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And you may well be right. When you get a bunch of greenhorn cricketers together, they may be able to express themselves a little bit more freely if they're playing against players who will look you in the eye and smile rather than tell you to get stuffed. There may well be something in that. It's a nice little theory. Sorry, it's a nice big theory. But while by no means am I saying England are going to go and win this five-match series against Australia, Australia haven't won over here in 18 years, which has to kind of play its part in the pragmatic look at this series. Is that right?
14
years. Sorry, 14 years.
It's a long time.
2001. We can talk about identities on both sides, and we can talk about the nature of how each team approaches their cricket. But ultimately, it will come down to these players. And England have beaten Australia over here for 14 years, in spite of that long-established Australian approach.
Well, England have managed to do it when they fight fire with fire, because in 05 and 09, that's what they managed to do. I mean, how's about the attacking, the run rate? Do you think England would have won this game if Brendan McCullum wasn't so hell-bent on attacking? I wonder whether McCullum's tactics
cost him. It's hard to win a game when you concede 500, absolutely. But then it helps when one of your players makes a 90 and 100 better than a run of ball. Because then that kind of balances it out. Short boundaries at Lord's, value for runs, Sun was out for 5 days. McCullum played like that. Clark will play like that. Maybe slightly more conservative. You know, he might stick a deep point out to his spinner, which kind of McCullum hilariously refused to do, and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But I think we're splitting hairs, really. You're right to bring up the question of, are England ready for them? Because I think player for player, in terms of ability, I think we've got a decent chance. Are they hardened enough? Well, we'll have to wait and see on that one. I think it's a legitimate cause for concern, though.
If we're trying to create a narrative, it is this question about whether these young players who can bat in Test cricket with very high run rates, who can entertain, does that also come with a fragility or a strength, is the question that we don't know about yet. Are they battle-hardened? Do they have that in them already? Does the player that grows up playing 2020 cricket and trying to clear the boundary, do they have an innate sense of occasion? And if so, is that in a good way or a bad way? And that's something, is part of the unknown, is what we're saying.
Yeah, the people who concern me when they go home and play for England are those who are a little bit diffident, you know, who don't really want to put themselves up for it and don't look an interviewer in the eye and don't really feel like they really, really fancy.
What did Atherton say about Habib? I think Atherton said about Habib that Habib called him Sir the whole way through his test match.
Yeah. Mark Lathwell evidently licked the gravy off his plate during a Lord's lunch, so the story goes. Certain players are just not cut out for it, whether they can cream it through the covers or not, as we well know. I look at this England team, and to me it has the basis of a bunch of pretty interesting and bolshy kinds of characters. Mm-hmm. I don't see Mark Wood coming in for his debut at Lord's and feeling like he shouldn't be there.
I was waiting for Wood. I mean, this is going to be the fun bit. This guy is fun. Oh, mate. This is good, isn't it?
He's proper funny.
Fish on Wood.
He might be mad. He might be clinically mad.
Brilliant.
Because he's, you know, it's the horse. I can't get over the horse. And the fact that he decided to bring it out of the home of cricket, this place where...
Brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah,
they play quite a tight moment in the match as well.
Yeah, genuinely.
And he's at mid-on thinking, all right, do you know what? If I get a catch. And then he's just gone, isn't he? He's just gone.
Yeah, and that ball to Watling as well. I mean,
yeah, that was
the moment, because I think leading up to the test, everything was about how much of a character he was and how refreshing he'd be. And that was the moment you're like, no, this guy's actually a player.
Yeah.
There's something very real to this character. This isn't just about fake horses and you know, scaring Olympic athletes and potches for him. You know, this is about a guy who can get that kind of bounce and that kind of movement off a fifth-day track.
Yeah.
Ed Cowan on Twitter saying that he thought that Mark Wood was the standout bowler in England. He couldn't believe it took England so long to pick him.
Well, it's quite funny. I was speaking to the coach of Papua New Guinea about 3 years ago. It was a guy called Peter Anson. Played a lot of great cricket in Australia. I think he might have played first-class cricket as well. And it was just for a piece on Papua New Guinea. And just as I was about to hang up, he was like, oh, can I give you a tip for the top? And his tip for the top was Mark Wood. So Mark Wood was in Queensland as an overseas for 3 years. And they were just thoroughly impressed with him. They were impressed with his bowling, but also his batting and fielding.
Yeah.
And he said to me, and his exact words were, this guy's going to be a star. Look out for him. And remember that I told you.
So now, what are we making this fragile thing? Have you heard this fragile thing? I think it was DeBell suggested on the Switch Hit the other day that actually they shouldn't play him at Headingley because he's fragile and he needs to be protected. He said he'd bring Plunkett in.
He's had a lot of injuries.
He's only played
24...
Yeah, 24, 25 first-class matches.
Yeah, last season was more interrupted than the season before when he had a lot of continuity. I mean, I still really like Plunkett, and I can't quite see how he's lost his place. I don't know whether that's to do with fitness or to do with mentality.
Well, this is not attending the Yorkshire Day on the Saturday. I've been trying to dig into what exactly happened. It was apparently something to do with a car. Any insights? What did Plunkett get up to?
No, I don't know the ins and outs, to be honest.
Badly timed absence, you've got to say. England squad just about to be announced. Yeah. Did it make any difference? Would they have
I don't think you'd have played after Wood
what
was
exactly,
next
we
in
don't
line.
Know what exactly happened.
We don't know what he got up to.
We don't know what he got up to.
No.
I fear for Wood in the long term, but he may well be one of those players. English cricket is littered with them through the ages. You know, from Frank Tyson to Larwood to Simon Jones, you know, to John Snow, players who didn't really play that regularly, but when they did, they were memorable. And he has the materials for that. I'm not sure he has the body to last.
Mm. Okay, very quickly, lads, those cable knit sweaters, they were a disgrace, weren't they? Were they a disgrace?
They were an improvement.
Well, they were a half improvement on the ones that didn't have any cable.
One step at a time.
We actually got in touch with some West Coast fashion experts who are also 14. They had this to say about the cable knit sweaters.
Ew, seriously?
That's so gross.
Thanks for that, ladies. Okay, we're not going to travel far for the next topic. England have got a new coach. His name is Trevor Bayliss. And before we start talking about it, what we're going to do is get an Australian perspective, and we're going to get it from Andrew Menskell on the Australian Cricket Podcast. Now, many of you may remember Andrew from the early days of the Podblast. Mm. He's a man who has captured the hearts of Australian cricket podcast listeners.
He has, and he's certainly captured our heart. Andrew Menners, what do you think about the appointment of Trevor Bayliss?
Hello, Podblasters. It's Menners here from the Australian Cricket Podcast. And I've had a couple of days to reflect on the appointment of Trevor Bayliss as head coach of the English cricket side for the upcoming Ashes series. And as I've thought about it, it was a great decision by the Brains Trust at the ECB, because Bayliss has had a lot of success at all levels of coaching, from domestic first-class cricket to 50-over cricket to successfully leading the Sri Lankan cricket team to the World Cup final in 2011. But I guess the biggest selling point for Trevor Bayliss is his intimate knowledge of the current Australian squad. He has coached New South Wales, and 9 of this Ashes squad are from New South Wales. So I'm sure Trevor Bayliss is going to bring some invaluable information for the English cricket team. Doesn't sit too well with me having an Aussie coaching England, and I wonder how the English cricket fans are taking the appointment.
All right, thanks, Menes. That's a couple of topics there, lads. First of all, intimate knowledge of the Australian side. I've got an image for you, which I got to admit jarred with me. England West Indies. Otis Gibson's obviously just stopped as West Indies coach. He's straight into the England camp, and he's up there celebrating with the lads when the first wicket falls. And I just thought, too soon, Otis. Mm. Too soon.
Do you think football style, he should have refused to celebrate?
Yes, is that what
you
would
like to say? Muted balcony celebration.
Those of you who enjoy the Guardian Football Weekly podcast will know how much they love a muted celebration. But I don't know, Ross, is there something about that intimate knowledge that he's developed at domestic level that makes it a betrayal?
Well, it was going to be Gillespie or Bayliss, so one way or the other, we were getting an Aussie next, and we haven't really.
We'll come on to the Aussie bit. I mean, is it a betrayal of the Aussies?
Has he betrayed the Aussies?
Yeah, let's begin with that betrayal, and then we'll move on to the other betrayal.
Okay, a tale of betrayal. I think that he hasn't betrayed the Aussies. I think we all know we work in a sort of metropolitan workplace. World cricket is that sort of game nowadays. I don't think Bayliss needs to be worried about doing it, but I'm sure he's absolutely up for this task. He loves coaching, doesn't he? That's what people always say.
He's
an old-fashioned guy. He just lives to coach. He loves it. I think he'll be a great appointment. I don't think he'll be worried about hurting any feelings in the Aussie dressing room.
Do you think there's any room?
Be looking forward to breaking some hearts.
Mm. Do you think there's any room for a kind of overextended kind of calling in the bailiffs type joke?
Oh, I thought that was something.
Yeah, I was thinking about it. Yeah. I can't do it yet.
No. He's looking for a headline.
First listener can do something about the bailiffs knocking on the door.
Didn't Trevor Bayliss also invent the wind-up radio?
Yes.
I always often bring that up.
Naturally, it's not important. All Out Cricket magazine cover to cover and about 6 months ago, not to be confused with,
not
a little bit in the back.
Very nice.
Bonnie Rene has pointed out that there's also something called the Bayliss effect to do with blood rushing through the capillaries. You can look it up on Wikipedia, people.
Okay,
so there's a little bit of material out there on the Bayliss front. Okay, I got accused last night by At Cricket Geek of being, quote, parochial. I thought you were better than that when I said I didn't want an Aussie coach of England. What do you think of that?
Well, I tell you what I think about that. You're not parochial. No, you are.
You are, but another way.
However, I have to say, I agree with you.
No, I do.
Hold the phone.
Now, the problem that I have is English cricket at an international level is identified alongside and next to Australian cricket. And that's what it's all about, really, ultimately. We play really important and lovable games against other countries. And it's great. And it's great that it happens and it's great that they're there. But when it comes to actually kind of, you know, blood on the hands agony and being in bad form for days because it's just not gone your way, it all comes down to Australia and England. And they know it just as much as we know it. And hopefully, you know, we can kind of exist quite comfortably with each other knowing that. But when there's crossover like this, I have to say it doesn't sit comfortably with me. And I wrote a weird article straight after this when I was I was in bits after what happened on May the 7th, absolutely in bits. And looking at the landscape of the UK, I couldn't figure out where I was. And then running alongside all these emotions was this sense that I didn't want an Australian coach of my team. Now, that runs kind of counter to everything that I believe in life.
Yeah.
And yet there I was thinking, I don't want Gillespie in charge of my team. Yeah. Or I don't want Langer or Ned Kelly or whoever it might be. I don't actually.
You're complex. You can hold two opposing thoughts in your mind at the same time.
And probably increasingly small-minded, I would have thought. Okay. But either way, I'm not entirely comfortable with it.
But if we want to win this next Ashes series, is it the case, Fish, that Bayliss is better equipped to do that than Peter Moores ever was?
Oh, I don't think we were going to win the Ashes with Peter Moores. No. I think Bayliss is actually quite a good appointment. But I understand what you're saying about wanting an English coach. The fact of the matter is, it seems that Australian coaches get more exposure because they're willing to step outside Australia. I mean, you know, so there was the announcement, was it yesterday or this morning, that Mal Loy is now going to be a coach for the Bangladesh national team. And apart from him and Andy Moles, is there anyone else doing anything like that abroad?
Who's the fast bowling coach? That went on there was a whistleblower and wore a wire for the ICC.
Ian Ponce.
Oh, Ian Ponce.
Yeah, a bit of fast bowling coaching, going to Bangladesh, stuff like that.
Bangladesh, yeah. Dimi Mascarenhas, I guess, counts, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah, I suppose he does, yeah. But
I can see your point.
Yeah, ultimately, we've got a coach here who has not been afraid to step outside his comfort zone, who has coached another national team in Sri Lanka. Has that, if he can deal with the politics within Sri Lankan cricket, he can handle some egg and bacon snuffs.
I mean, even the politics, this incredible story that's come out about the women's cricket over there and the harassment is just amazing. Not that that's obviously linked in any way at all, but
blame Trevor for that.
No, Trevor, I don't blame you for
claim
that.
There,
yeah, that's
Trevor, I'm going to blame you for a lot of things over the coming months and years, but I'm not going
to
blame you for that.
I would also add, having lurched to the right, I would also back Vish up entirely. I think it's quite a canny appointment.
I mean, is there an English option?
I have to say, I never quite fancied Dizzy. I don't think Strauss ever really fancied him. Throughout, I was kind of cautious about that, really, and sensed that probably wasn't going to be his man. I just don't think it would have fitted quite right for what Strauss is going to be trying to do with the England side. Gillespie handled himself really classily afterwards as well, I thought.
He did.
And Bayliss, it does add up. It does tick the various boxes, aside from the nationality issue. So I think it's quite a good appointment.
Who was the
I just
English
think it's
option?
Regrettable.
Who was the English guy option? Looked over? Did they even speak to... Did they speak to Mick Newell again? Did they bother?
Mm. Well, it's difficult, though, because Mick Newell is still a selector.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And there was talk that Mark Robinson was ruled out because of his close ties with Peter Moores. Whether that was because they didn't want that ethos again... managing and coaching the England team, or whether they thought Robinson wouldn't take a job that was just vacated by Peter Moores. It wasn't really, you know, there wasn't really much clear about that. But ultimately, it's there aren't too many candidates.
No, in terms of English candidates, for sure, the cupboard's pretty bare. My discomfort with it being a foreign coach is only it being an Australian coach. This is how it gets even more ridiculous and convoluted and clearly doesn't stand up in any kind of court of ethical law. But I'd have been more comfortable with you know, Gary Kirsten, who I thought would get it, incidentally. I thought he would get it. He hadn't ruled himself out. Obviously, done India as well, and so on and so on. So I thought he might have got it, and I'd have felt, weirdly, pathetically, a little bit more at ease with that.
What about the fact that Bayliss, ludicrous, according to some reports today, really had to be persuaded not once but twice? This is not a guy who went, what an honour.
I like that.
Yeah,
as do I.
If I was a recruitment consultant, and you know, you don't say I want the job.
You'd never be there.
No, God, By no means. But I would look for the guy that doesn't want it, who's far too good for it, and then finally relents and goes, okay.
Yeah.
Because whatever twisted logic that is, I think he's probably very good at this job. And I think he will be.
I'm buying that logic. And you know what? Ross is never going to be a recruitment consultant.
No.
But you regularly ask yourself that question. What
I do.
If I were?
What if I were a recruitment consultant? What would my day be like today?
I mean, this is what your selection of girlfriends is based on.
Well,
isn't it?
Now,
what
now.
If I were?
What if I were a recruitment consultant? Yeah.
How would I feel? What if you were Ralph Fiennes?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What's the name of that club in Kennington? Was it South Pacific?
Yes.
That's not a club where
don't
you have
that.
To...
That's a favoured haunt of all-out cricket,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, that's not a club where you have to ask the question, what would a recruitment consultant think? Because all the recruitment consultants around you would tell you the answer, wouldn't they? That's a club of recruitment consultants and estate agents. And me, quite regularly.
Indeed.
And it sounds like you lot too. So South Pacific, bit of free advertising for you there. Okay, guys, let's move on.
Cricket pub
we've got a lot to get through.
To you, guys,
next, we're going to come up and we're going to discuss the IPL. IPL number 94 is over. The Mumbai Indians have won. I ask you this, gentlemen. Does anyone care? Have I got any takers on IPL?
Well, we've got a couple of IPL pseudo-specialists.
Just a sec. The Cranberries, first concert Ross ever went to.
That's true.
Really?
And also, strangely, the first fan club I was ever in.
Right.
The Cranberries fan club.
Mine was a
circular.
Was it?
Yeah.
That's good. I was also in the W.H. Smith fan club, which is quite a niche fan club.
You just got slightly cheaper magazines.
I got quite cheap stationery.
Brilliant.
And a £5 voucher on
Why
my birthday.
No flies on you, eh?
Yeah.
Why did you need all that stationery?
Because otherwise you wouldn't get a W.H. Smith voucher. You can,
it's got an active mind, isn't it?
Because I wanted to be a recruitment consultant. That was never to be.
Okay, so IPL number eight.
Something like that.
Ish.
Mumbai Indians have won. They were doing badly. First four games they lost.
Brilliant, well done.
That's my fact.
Yeah, I think they put a run of nine victories out of their last ten.
Deserved and, winners.
Yeah, I mean, the table...
It's all about momentum, isn't it?
That's what they say about so the IPL. True. The winners never lie with the table that doesn't lie as well.
That's catchy.
Together. It is, yeah. I think that was a catchy tournament. No, it was quite an interesting tournament from what I watched, and I've definitely watched more of it than you three.
I like the Eastern gilets that they were all forced to wear. I saw
that. Yeah.
They were odd and unsettling.
Yeah, it's good because no matter how progressive the IPL is, they still find white people in Indian clothes funny.
Yeah, but so it is quite funny.
Yeah.
I find it funny too.
Yeah.
And they tried to introduce some girls.
Yeah, that was good.
And they spoke at least for three balls in every 20 overs.
Yeah, there was, as you'd know, there were two timeouts every year.
Yes, yes.
Because that's the thing about 2020 cricket. It needs more breaks.
Yeah,
that's
breaks,
right. Yeah. That's what it needs.
The thing is, it was quite an interesting tournament because players like Kohli and Dhoni didn't do very well. The overseas players did quite well, but there was kind of like a new breed of, you could see the next generation coming through.
Cyborgs.
Dhoni suddenly looks quite old, doesn't he? Dhoni?
Yeah, he does.
And a bit heavy set and a bit bored. And...
Yeah, the game's ridiculously moved on. It's almost like he needs a lighter bat now, at the very least a Zimmer frame. He's not, the superstar he once was. And there was certainly the impression from the Chennai fans that he might have been a busted flush, but there were Deepak Kunda, there was a couple of other openers coming through who were quite exciting. The IPL's suddenly having that turnover after nearly a decade now. It's
I think
quite an interesting time for
I
me.
Think Rohit Sharma's definitely my favourite Indian cricketer. I just think he's such a beautiful man. And I know I've actually compared my lips to his on this show in the past. But he's an amazing player to watch.
He's a terrific
You're more
player.
A Rahane fan though, aren't you?
Mm. I think he's the better player, yeah. But Sharma's my favourite.
And this is what I was talking when I was mentioning that I might compare it to the V Festival, is that I worry that the headliners from 8 years ago are still the headliners now. How many times can you put on The Killers and The Stereophonics before someone goes, hang on, I saw those guys in 2004. And I do think the tournament suffered from that. But players like Rahane and Rohit Sharma are certainly taking the place of those old guns. And I think it's all the better for it, because otherwise you've got the same central characters with the same old storylines. And the IPL needed to move on.
Yeah, agreed.
But much like those music festivals, you then go to the other... You go to the other side stages, don't you? Seek out these new acts.
This is a wonderful analogy. Keep it going.
It just keeps on giving.
I'm just going to go back talking about cricket there, sorry. There's been talk about this Legends series, kind of a natural offshoot of the IPL. Did you read about this recently? Yeah, some legend series, Warney and, I don't know, Jon Snow and Phil Edmonds or whoever. But it's a bunch of players who are not even in that kind of twilight zone between professional test cricket and IPL availability, but have now moved into the kind of, like, the out of shape Mickey Quinn years. And yeah, and they're still setting something up for them. So you know, that'll no doubt be coming to a podcast.
I know, I'm actually really excited about that.
Yeah, the idea, it'll be all over.
The idea of Phil Edmonds getting back in the swing of things. You know, lay down your business deal, Phil.
Let's not go down that road.
It's not even about the likes of Warne and maybe even Tendulkar. It's the filler players that I can't wait to see.
Yeah. So, all right, who you haven't seen on a cricket fit pitch for at least 10 years, who would you genuinely, sincerely want to see?
Robin Smith.
Great shout.
Yeah.
Straight off the bat.
Ian Austin.
Brilliant.
What does
shout.
He look like now?
Yeah.
That's the question.
That's just a fat fetish thing, isn't
well,
it?
Well,
you're not interested in those little dibbly dobbly.
I think he'll be svelte.
Those late swingers.
Aftab Habib. Just to call everyone sir.
Yeah. Nice and respectful.
Yeah,
I like that. Okay, that's wonderful. And actually, this segues quite nicely, but I'm still going to put a mindless jingle in because we're going to come back in a second and speak about a player who was playing along with a lot of those guys. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, he's been dropped. It's Shiv Chanderpaul. Shiv Chanderpaul's been dropped. I don't know whether you've noticed, but Indian Press is covering his WhatsApp spat with Phil Simmons, which has apparently now been made public.
No, I have not seen
this. Very, very pissed off not to be given those two games against Australia as a valedictory goodbye after 21 years service, let me tell you. Mm. Somebody has leaked the WhatsApp chats, and there we are. Ladies and gentlemen, Shiv Chanderpaul, 40 years old, 164 tests, average of 51.37, but averaged something like 16 over the last 11 tests.
Right.
Anyone objecting to Phil Simmons' stance? I can't see any justification for keeping a man who can't bat.
No. And it seems quite unchannable-like as
yes,
well.
Yes, it does, yeah. Doesn't it?
And oddly it? Egotistical, yeah.
Does it?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe I'm just being kind of casual and just watching the way he bats and thinking that, you know, he's kind of separate from, you know, the hurly-burly of ego-driven modern cricket and all of that. And he just does his thing in this kind of ancient fashion. But maybe, I don't know, maybe there is something in it. I
just kind of think I'm not too surprised that he's, you know, coming out with those kind of comments and sees it as a slight on him. Because it's quite a selfish thing to bring up so publicly. But yeah. It's not too surprising from a man who often bats with his tail and takes a single off the first ball. He's an incredible batsman and has done wonderful things with the bat.
Yeah.
I was about to say the West Indies there, but he's definitely, you know, played some match-winning nights for the West Indies. But he's quite a selfish player, and batting is quite a selfish art, so he gets away with it. But I'm not too surprised.
How was his son? Is his son good to go?
I thought that was the dream, wasn't it, that they would get to play together?
He's not going
to
make it. Phil Simmons has cut the ties. So okay, gents. This is going to be fun. His first ever game was against England at Georgetown, Guyana. May the 17th to 22nd, 1994.
Yeah, he had a massive helmet and a weird V100 bat.
Okay, but first one, and this is just
and he
an
got
easy
64.
That's extraordinary.
Yeah, he knows all the numbers.
Really does it. You're going to rain down questions on us.
No.
This will
still be fun.
Ready.
It'll be more fun because Phil might actually get some.
Oh my God, this is
okay.
Good.
Well, who won the game, Phil?
They did, because they did. Hick dropped him at slip.
Wow, there we go. Crikey.
That is a memory.
No, he does this.
Okay, this is fun. I want you to tell me the England bowling lineup in that game.
Oh.
I want you to give me four bowlers. Anyone that can give me four bowlers in that game.
Chris Lewis.
I've got one beer. By coincidence, I've got one beer between the four of us, and
good.
It goes to the person who can name the four bowlers.
Well, I think Gus was there. Gus Fraser? Was he there?
He was, and Chris Lewis was. So we got
and
two.
And Chris Lewis was. Oh, yeah,
the person
good.
Who names the fourth. I'm going to change it. It's like the Spanish Inquisition sketch.
I know this.
The person
this
who names
I read it the
fourth.
Other day.
So we've got Fraser and Lewis. Okay, they're the easy ones. Two more. Two more in 94.
Did Alan Eagleston play?
Yes, that's
the name. Oh, hello, Walker. That is extraordinary work.
That liquor.
No, wait a second, gentlemen. That's three out of four.
Yeah.
I wonder if I'm going to have to resort to clues for the fourth bowler.
See, that was the hardest one, I thought.
Yeah.
That was, in fact, the hardest one.
You're talking about another fourth seamer, was it?
Mark Islett.
I am not talking about a seamer.
Oh. Peter Such.
No, it's probably Tuffers.
No. Ooh.
Four. After the tour, he made loads of runs.
By this time, listeners have already Googled it, they've read it, and they're bored. They're over it.
But that's how fast humanity moves these days. But
I'll give you another clue.
No, it's not him either.
Ross and I have competed against him.
I don't know. I don't know. I feel a failure.
Well, we competed in the same tournament as him.
I must have, is it Min Patel?
No.
No.
In
Salisbury.
It's in Salisbury. First sip of the beer which he'll share.
Is that what we get? You know what you can have.
Wonderful stuff. Great stuff. So Atherton, Stewart, Ramprakash, Smith, Hick, Thorpe, Salisbury, Russell, Lewis, Fraser, Eagleston. Very quickly, West Indian bowling lineup: Ambrose, Walsh, Benjamin.
Mm.
Ain't bad that,
Kenny,
was
Kenny
it?
And Winnie. Yeah.
Holy Jesus moly. Shiv Chanderpool, you were a very interesting batsman to watch for a matter of moments, and then you bored me. But it happened. Shiv Chanderpool.
I saw him get one of the most incredible hundreds of all time in an ODI out there in the West Indies. He got 100, opened the bat, and he swept Harmison. But six twice in the same over. No one remembers because it's an ODI, but I was there. I've never seen anything like it.
I was there.
There was also the ODI where he was actually getting barracked by his own crowd because they thought he was batting too slowly against Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
Needed 10 to win off the last two balls. Hit a four and then hit a six.
Yes, yes, he did also do
and
that.
And was carried off the ground.
And he hit a 69 ball 100 against Australia.
So, Shiv, memories of Shiv.
Okay, that's been your All Out Cricket Pod Blast. Can you tell us, guys, I know we're very close to going to the press, what's going to be in the new issue, Phil Walker?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, we interviewed Ben Stokes a few days before he turned up at Lords and did all right for the number 55 batsman in the world. So Ben Stokes exclusive, and we are introducing our new diary writer for the summer. Mm-hmm. Fella up and coming at Surrey, Kumar, Sangakkara. So he signed up to All Out Cricket Magazine for the summer, like that.
There we go. Boom. That's terrific. I can't wait to read that diary.
Okay, lovely. So that's All Out Cricket Magazine coming out very soon. I was listening to another podcast the other day and they did this thing. They said, if you want to get in touch with the Cricket Podcast, Pod Blast, you can get in touch by various things. We're going to do that because that seems maybe it'll work.
What ways are there? Twitter?
You can use Twitter.
Yeah.
That's good. Lovely. That went well. Thank you for sending in another episode of England Season. Fantastic. We'll be back after the end of the England-New Zealand series, but before the Ashes, for more discussion of cricket, most likely.
I guess so.
So predictable.
Isn't it?
Here's to Kevin Costner.
We are the heroes of our time, but we're dancing with the demons in our minds. That's the winner of Eurovision, Sweden's winner. Will England be dancing with the demons of their mind, or will they be the heroes of their time? Join us next time.